Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 165 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltacka. Thanks for joining me again. We have a lot to go over in this episode. First, Canada's budget 2024, and it's going to shed a lot of light on what the Liberal government's position is on their relationship with licensed gun owners. We're going to talk about that with Ms. Wilson. Our friends over at Polycessivier off the rails again, protecting the narrative that the reason there's firearm-related violence in Canada is because there are licensed gun owners in Canada. So we got some interesting stuff from their Twitter feed, as always. Also, I've got the date for my bear hunt and a little bit of information about that as well. It's kind of interesting. And our community is expanding despite all the trouble that we've seen in the last 8+ years. Anyway, all that and more once we hear from our sponsors. A huge thank you goes out to our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter of Safari Club International. They do a lot of great work over there, including supporting the CCFR and the CCFR Radio Podcast. Check out all their great work at saskriversSCI.com. That's saskriversSCI.com. And thank you so much to our great friends over at Vortex Canada. They continue to support the CCFR podcast and the CCFR. Can't say enough about them. Check out all their great products at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. Vortex, the force of optics. Need a new boomstick? Bullseye North is Canada's shooting superstore and a proud supporter of the CCFR. With a wide selection of guns and top trending gear for any shooter, they have what you need. Plus, free shipping over $250, which includes ammo, or flat rate shipping of $17 under $250. Some conditions apply. Subscribe to their weekly newsletter to get first access to the hottest deals. CTOMS has been a provider of trauma care training to military and police in Canada for nearly 2 decades. Now this emergency medical training is being made available to a wider audience through CTOMS online courses. Go to ctomsacademy.com and use promo code CCFR30 to get 30% off. That's ctomsacademy.com. All right, we are back. So first thing, interesting. If you remember in the last podcast, I talked about this massive burn that I got. So I guess that would be a little bit more than, it was 17 days ago from when I'm recording this, that the injury happened. And guess who's wearing a watch and a ring now on this hand? Isn't that great? And look at the comparison. Yeah. This hand's just a little bit more pink. It's kind of like a baby rat skin or something on my left hand. There's no scarring or anything, and hair's growing on it too, and it looks as good as new. So it's kind of interesting. I think I got lucky on this burn. But if you remember the last time, like I explained how I burnt my hand, you know, terribly, pouring half a kettle of just boiled water at point blank range over my left hand, trying to create a cup of coffee. I guess only I could do something like that. And I never did show you the picture of the hand. So the reason why I'm doing this is I'm really surprised how quickly it healed. So trigger warning, I'm going to show you a picture of what my hand looked like, not the day of injury, not the next day, but the day following that. So I guess that's a day and a half later after I injured it. I pulled the bandages off because I just needed to for whatever reason, probably afraid that they were going to stick to my hand. Because it felt like they were sticking. I think that's why I did it. But anyway, so this is very close to when I injured it. This is what, here comes a picture. If you don't want to see it, look away. This is what my hand looked like a day and a half after I burnt it. Okay. So that's where I started. Now, 11 days after the injury. So I guess that's, I don't know, 10 days after the injury. This is what it looked like. Yeah. Isn't that amazing? So when I was at the hospital, they said, well, burns heal fast, but I had no idea they were going to heal that fast. And I don't know if anyone else has got a burn like that, but it healed remarkably quick. Like I was working the day after that injury with one finger, obviously, right? I'm typing like this, but yeah. So, and now it's pretty much as good as new. So very surprising. A bunch of you guys out there will know a lot more about burns than I do, but I was quite surprised. Maybe I just got lucky and I'll take it. All right. Now, something kind of fun. I have a date for my bear hunt and it will commence on May the 19th. So that is probably the day after you see the next episode of the CCFR Radio podcast. I'll be off on my spring bear hunt, which if you are familiar with the podcast and with me and the CCFR, is the first time I will have ever gone hunting in my life. So that's kind of interesting. Well, since I made that commitment, I've been investing a bit of my personal money, you know, which I don't have unlimited amounts of it, but I bought a new hunting rifle and with a really nice optic on there, a Vortex optic and a bunch of other stuff. I even bought a rooftop tent camper setup. Maybe I'll show it to you some other time. So I'm kind of getting into this hunting thing, having never gone still, right? So jumping the gun, as it were, right? An interesting pun there. But we'll see. Hopefully I like it. I still like to camp anyway, so I'll still use a bunch of that other stuff. But I'm investing all this money into future hunting. And one of the reasons is the diet that I'm on, which is the carnivore diet. You know, I'm like to eat maybe more wild game because I've been eating a little bit of it from this being donated to me from some friends here and there. And so anyway, all that to say, I'm getting completely ready for this hunt. It's 2 weeks from now, roughly, just a little over 2 weeks. And so I'll say my final farewell in the next episode, but the episode after that, I will probably tell you whether I bagged something or not. I think it's okay if I tell you whether I got a bear or not. So look forward to that in the near future. Anyway, just some quick couple of anecdotes, adventures on this whole I'm launching into hunting thing. I haven't even actually experienced it yet, but I'm already planning all the stuff that I'm going to do. Anyway, we'll see if that pans out or not, as if I had the time. I sighted in my rifle with Scott Carpenter of International Shooting Supplies. That's where Scott got me a deal on the rifle. And he's also currently the president of the CCFR, Scott Carpenter. And that was a bit of a chore, hey? All you guys out there that sight in these ultralight, thin-barreled, you know, heavier caliber bolt actions, that's a bit of a chore. Apparently you can't shoot multiple rounds out of this thing and, you know, sight it in. You got to wait for the barrel to cool down because it won't shoot true after a few rounds. And I'm like, I'm not used to that, right? Because, you know, a day of using a semi-auto or a handgun, and you're shooting 300-400 rounds. And I don't remember ever having to wait till the barrel cooled down. You know, I could shoot 40-50 rounds out of a rifle, out of an AR-15 or whatever, and that's not an issue. You know, let it cool while I'm reloading my mags or something. But anyway, yeah, just that was a little weird. And it's funny because I was talking to my friend Ashley Stuckless, who I'm going on his show, Hi BC, on Wild TV for this hunt. And I said, you know, it's interesting. I showed up at the range with 40 rounds and I went through way too much ammunition trying to sight this rifle. And I'm not really that great at it. You know, I'm not a long range shooter, but nonetheless, you know, I was coordinating with Ashley. I said, okay, I got this and this and this, and is there anything else that I need, whatever. And he says, you know, you got your ammo. And I'm like, yeah, I'll bring, you know, whatever, 20 rounds or 40 rounds or whatever. And he goes, oh yeah. And I said, well, something I'm getting used to is if I'm going to go on a week, you know, 3 days of training, I'm going to blow through 1,000 rounds of ammunition. So of course they started laughing because that sounds very foreign to a hunter, as what he said to me was very foreign to we'll say an action shooter, a sports shooter, or somebody in the firearms training business from a law enforcement context, which is like, oh yeah, I go out there, I got about 4 or 5 rounds, you know, like with him on him, right, when he's hunting, and then, you know, whatever, the rest of the box at the camp. And I'm like, 4 or 5 rounds. So anyway, it took a little bit of getting used to. So that was pretty funny. I'm going to share this last piece with you before we move on, which is Ashley has got a couple of episodes of his show that's on Wild TV on his YouTube channel. So if you go to YouTube and you type in Hi BC, you'll find the Hi BC channel. And he's got two hunts. He's got one that's a deer hunt and one that's a hunt for stone sheep. Okay. Now from someone, this is interesting. The videos are awesome, right? The show's great. Really enjoy the show. And so I'm watching this from somebody that hasn't done a lot of hunting. Well, never been hunting, but hasn't even watched a lot of hunting. I watched, you know, a few hunting shows here and there. Well, the deer hunt looked a lot of fun to me. The most fun was at the very end where they have backstraps and they're, sorry, I'm spoiler alert, sorry about that. But they got back straps. You roast them over the fire. And I'm like, I eat only meat. So I'm like, yeah, that looks, I like that part of it. But the rest of it, I'm like, not sure. These guys were hiking over all over the mountains, and then they're having to do a pack out of this deer. And I'm like, even that, I mean, I'm starting easy with a bear hunt, right? Which is mostly off quads or out of a vehicle kind of thing. And then you're doing a little bit of walking. And, you know, and I'm like, oh, you know, I'm gonna have to do a pack out there, probably 100 or 200 meters, who knows, right? And I'm like, yeah, that doesn't sound like the fun part. But then I'm looking at this deer hunt and I'm like, that looks like a lot of hunting, a lot of packing. And then I watched the stone sheep hunt, right? Because I had said, you know, the wild sheep guys, right? Like these are tough hunters because they're having to do pack outs in some pretty challenging terrain. Not that it's, you know, it's not always challenging, but apparently Ashley and his buddy were up there. It was a 10-day hunt and they're sleeping under tarps and stuff. And I'm like, all right, I think I'm gonna have to toughen up a little bit to do all this whole hunting gig, especially if I'm going to get into these exotic hunts like sheep and following them all over like cliffs and all the rest of that stuff. So anyway, I'm going to take you guys along on my whole adventure here. It may be more of an adventure than I bargained for. All right. Last thing I'm going to cover before we bring Tracy on is, so next week, so this coming Monday from when you're watching this, if you're watching when it's come out, is our trip, Wilson and my trip over to Calgary, to the Calgary Shooting Center and to the Shooting Edge with the winner of our Best Day Ever contest. So we'll be doing the shooting packages and witnessing the shopping spree that's happening this coming Monday for me. So in the next podcast, we will have footage of the shopping spree and a little bit of the shooting packages and a little bit of comment from the winner of our contest. So anyway, make sure that you stay tuned for that. All right. I've said my piece. Let's bring Tracy on and move on to the next thing. All right, via Skype, we've got Tracy Wilson of the CCFR. Wilson!
Wilson! Wilson!
I almost miss that in the 2 weeks between shows.
Do you? It's weird. Yeah. I don't miss it. I don't miss doing it.
Huh. Too bad. You just keep doing it or it'll be weird now.
Yeah. Well, it's just same thing almost of the podcast and TV show in general. I just have to keep doing it now. I'm locked in.
Yes, you're locked in.
Yeah, unfortunately. All right. Let's get at it because we've got stuff to talk about. First thing is we need to talk about the AGM and give a big reminder about the AGM and how awesome it's going to be.
Yeah, that's right. So the annual general meeting of the members of the CCFR will take place in beautiful Calgary, Alberta, May 25th. We'll start in the morning with a business meeting that's open to everybody who's a member of the CCFR. There's no cost to attend. We'll go over all the business of the CCFR, have some coffee, talk, figure stuff out. Then we're going to come back in the afternoon. We're going to open the bar, and those who bought tickets to the fundraising banquet will enjoy an amazing evening of guns, gear, all kinds of hunting trips and amazing prizes and incredible auction items that will be up for auction with both the live auction and silent auction. And of course, our very special guest, Mr. Jim Shockey, Canadian hunting legend. So you can find everything you need to know about the CCFR AGM, how to get there, how to get tickets, what you need, at ccfragm.ca. Tickets are limited. So once they sell out, that's it. There won't be any more.
Yeah. So get your tickets if you can get them as soon as possible, because when they're, as you said, like when they're gone, because we got the maximum amount of seats that we possibly can in the ballroom that we're in. So
yes,
we can't squeeze.
So I can't add more.
Yeah, we can't add more. So anyway, all right.
Yeah. And you can watch our socials. Actually, we're going to be posting up some of the auction items that will be available. The live auction, of course, will be available online as well. But of course, it's a lot more fun to be there in person. But yeah, we'll be showing everybody what we've got up for auction and thanking all our generous donors who are helping make this event a huge success.
Yeah. And as we said before, we're trying something different every year just to see what kind of works for the CCFR and, you know, works for everyone that wants to come to the AGM or whatever. So this year we're doing a fundraising banquet, very similar to some of the other big wildlife organizations. So, you know, if it works, that's great. If we want to try something new next year, we're going to do that. So every year is going to be something a little bit different. So just so everyone's aware, because We have been kind of mixing it up the last couple of years, haven't we?
Yeah, it's been very different. And the dinner at this event is going to be, excuse me, particularly fancy. It's like a gourmet meal with delicacies from every region of the country. So it's called A Taste of Canada. So it's very Canadiana and all kinds of delicious, good stuff, something for everybody. And yeah, it just should be a really fun evening to get together, raise a little bit of money for a good cause. You know, we've got an election coming around the corner and we can't do the big things we do without big help. So yeah, that's kind of the name of the game and we're really looking forward to it. I cannot wait to get there.
Yeah. I mean, the meal is extravagant, right? So
yes,
really extravagant. If you go to, as you said, ccfragm.ca, you can see what the menu is. It's anyway, we went with something pretty special, pretty schwanky this time around. So,
yeah, we'll see how that goes. I'm excited for it, but I don't know. I'm a bit of a foodie, so we'll see.
Well, next year we already have planned. It's going to be cold cuts. So
yeah, burgers. I wouldn't object to that either, to be honest.
Yeah, if we get past an election cycle, we'll have spent so much money. We're going to have cold cuts and just kind of a get together next time. Maybe at a local park.
Macaroni and cheese.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, moving on. Okay. So something happened over the last couple of weeks, which is really interesting. And there's a few different things we want to talk about this, but it's the federal government released its budget. And of course it has a little tie in with the gun buyback, the assault style weapon buyback, whatever their descriptor is. And, and some other things too. So I thought we'd kick that around a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. So I was keeping my eye on this because this budget spans over the next 2 years. And I was watching for that line item on the buyback confiscation program so I could see how far down the road they are on this, right? That's very important. As you know, they've already spent $47.2 million, I think it is, on the confiscation program. And not a single gun has been picked up. And I'm happy with that. That's fine. So the budget amount that they've allocated over the next 2 years is only $30.4 million over 2 years. So you're talking like $15 million a year, which, you know, if it was in your bank account, it would be pretty exciting. But on a federal budget item, it's literally nothing. In fact, I don't think it's enough to even keep up the overhead they have on the administrative end of this. So the good news is when I look at that, what that tells me is they have not allocated any money to actually go and start confiscating firearms, which means it's not likely to happen, at least for the next 2 years. And of course, by then we'll be into an election cycle and they may not be here anyways. So, you know, it's the budget was bad news for all Canadians, but in a way it was sort of good news for gun owners.
Yeah. Yeah. It's there's a lot going on there. Obviously, they're not budgeting for the buyback. I mean, it was it the Fraser Institute or someone? One of these think tanks had said that this program could cost up to $7 billion to roll out. If it was rolled out, you know, in consistent with the vision that the Trudeau Liberals had 2 weeks after the spree shooting in Nova Scotia when they thought they would capitalize on this dark day in Canadian history. So if it's consistent with that vision, it's like $7 billion.
Yeah, well, when they first introduced the ban back in May of 2020, former Public Safety Minister Bill Blair said it would cost between $300 and $400 million. But he said there was only about 150,000 rifles affected, which we know is clearly untrue. The PBO came back and said it will be upwards of $800 million or just under $800 million. And the Fraser Institute accounted for the cost of actually, you know, compensating people. And it would be somewhere between $2.6 billion all the way up to $6.7 billion. And that there was about 518,000 rifles affected. So, you know, I kind of have this theory that why Bill sort of lowballed those numbers. You know, 150,000 rifles. We know there's 90,000 AR-15s alone, which were previously restricted and therefore they were registered. So they know who's got them. Are they trying to say that all the other models and variants they banned would only account for about 60,000 guns total? We know that's untrue. And I think the idea was they were going to lowball those numbers. So when, you know, compliance was low, you know, if they got 150,000 guns out of this, they could say, oh, we've had great success. I don't know, but the numbers are all over the place. You've got Bill Blair as low as $300 million and the Fraser Institute as high as $6.7 billion. Who knows what the truth would be, but I don't actually see this ever happening. So,
well, when it comes to the federal government, we know it'll be somewhere around $5 to $7 billion just because that's how they operate. Look at the Trans Mountain Pipeline.
Yeah.
Right? You know, it was supposed to cost the taxpayer zero, and now it's like something like $32 billion, or I don't know, something like that, right? Something crazy.
And it'll be worse than the long gun registry for sure.
Yeah, well, of course. And things are a lot more expensive than they are, than they were back in the long gun registry days. And you know, and I think when Bill Blair came out with that number, he didn't want to make it look like it was going to cost a lot, so Canadians weren't going to balk at the cost, right? But here's the thing. He was probably just thinking, well, 150,000 rifles divided by whatever, divide that into $300 million. There you go. It's like, well, I don't think he even considered the administrative costs. And the other thing that's really important to remember, and the reason why, even if there's really low compliance, even if they only take in, you know, 180,000 rifles, let's say, the administrative cost is the same whether they take in two rifles, but they make this available across the country and all the infrastructure required, or they take in 250,000 rifles.
Right.
Like the administrative cost is what's going to bury Canadians in the mountain of debt that they're already buried in. So it's pretty wild. I mean, you know, the Liberals, they capitalized on the opportunity. They didn't care about what can actually be done, how much it's actually going to cost, any impact on safety. Because if you remember, the guy that committed that spree shooting was not a licensed gun owner, and he didn't source any of the guns that were used in that shooting within Canada. He illegally smuggled them all from the United States, which the buyback would not even touch in the remotest, right? So it's, again, right? Like it's, this whole plan doesn't stand up to any scrutiny whatsoever, but whatever, man, that's the Trudeau Liberals. It's a very unique group of people in the entire history of our country. So
that's an interesting way to put it, a unique group of people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's not your father's or your grandfather's Liberal Party. It's not your parents' Liberal Party. This is a completely different group of people, and they are not liberal at all. So anyway, I think we did quite a few interviews. If you total them up, you know, through this whole budget process, we probably did, I don't know, 5 or 6 between the two of us.
Yeah, I did one today, actually. And it was interesting because you can tell that sometimes with media, and I mean, like, look, not everybody's a subject matter expert on this, but he said, you know, this is what the government's willing to spend to get these guns off the street, you know, and it's these are not on the street. They're in the safes and gun rooms of licensed gun owners where they've been safely and without issue for decades. So if we were spending hundreds of million dollars to get illegally smuggled guns in the hands of violent repeat offenders off the street, I probably wouldn't say a word about it, right?
Yeah.
But that's not the case. So, yeah, it's interesting that the messaging out of the Liberals still does permeate and sink in different places. But, yeah, just keep hammering away at it.
Well, you know, speaking of keeping these weapons apparently off the street, our friends over at Polycessuvien, which is, it's always a slow motion disaster over there. I just noticed something and I thought it was worth mentioning. The only way, and this is, and I've had to explain this to media too, they never put this part on TV or on the radio for some reason, but the only way that the Liberals' plan works, the only way that Canadians will agree with this buyback and these prohibitions or whatever, is they have to tie licensed gun owners to the carnage that Canadians see in their communities across the country not on a daily basis, but in some parts almost daily, right? They have to tie that to licensed gun owners for any of their initiatives to make sense. And everybody that spent 15 minutes looking at this topic knows that there's those, as Rob Carver from the Winnipeg Police said, these communities don't intersect. So they put all their effort into trying to make that connection. And you know who does that as well is Polly, right? They, you know, you see these full auto shootings in White Rock. You see all this total carnage and mayhem, and they don't breathe a word, right?
Oh, no.
So what did they do, whatever it was, like a week ago? They have this little poster that they post up all the time to show all the mass shootings committed by licensed gun owners. And it's funny. It's a little grid. I'm showing it to you right now. It's this little grid, And this is the best they could come up with over the last 70 years in Canada, okay? And they even got two spaces missing. They couldn't even come up with two more spaces. And in fact, when you look at this, because this is what they do all day long, it's like licensed gun owners are the problem. Don't worry about everybody else, right? And right. If you look through this thing like I did, when they posted, I'm like, well, yeah, about 50% of multiple victim public shootings in Canada have been committed by people that legally obtained their firearms. But the problem is there's about 15 of those events in the last 70 years. So you're talking seven or eight.
Rare.
Okay. So like, you know, it's unacceptable if it ever happens even once, but we're talking about a nation of 40 million people. And it is people do bad things like this all the time. Look at the James Cree stabbing spree, right? James Cree Nation stabbing mm-hmm. spree. That more people were killed than 80% of the multiple victim public shootings in Canadian history in that stabbing spree, right? So again, if you're going to talk about these things, you have to be reasonable. But even if you look at their little grid here, there's about five of these that weren't actually defined as mass shootings. Like that's right. How difficult a time they have. That's how bad at this argument game they are. And yet they still keep on trying.
Oh yeah, they keep doing it because they're not doing it to actually win an argument with us or with other pro-gun people or you know, pro-safety people. What they're trying to do is get that out in front of as many eyes as possible to do exactly what you said, is taint the public's image of gun owners and make a direct connection between licensed gun owners and violence. And yeah, there has been a handful of tragedies, and they are unacceptable and they're horrible and tragic. But at the same time, we don't live in a country where we assign mass guilt to, you know, tens of millions of people for the crimes of six. You know, it's unreasonable.
Yeah, it's a real mess. But anyway, and when it comes to violence, random violence, especially mass violence, I mean, you have the Bluebird Cafe arson back in the 70s in Montreal. Like 150 people or 130 people were injured and 35 people died. For $2 mm-hmm. worth of gasoline, probably 90 cents worth of gasoline in those days, and a match and a lighter, right? And the knife attack, the James Cree Nation knife attack. And of course the van attack, 18 people died, 28 in total affected, but 18 people died and another 11 injured or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, you can check the numbers yourself. I just don't have them off the top of my head right now because I didn't look that up ahead of time. But
we don't treat any of those other tragedies the way we treat one where it was committed with a firearm.
Of course. Like
we're not talking about banning people from renting vans or buying petrol or, you know, we're not talking about any of that. But when it comes to guns, it's like, well, we must punish, you know, millions of gun owners for these crimes.
Well, like it's. But this is the frustrating nature of this. And until everyone in that conversation, in the national conversation about gun violence, until everyone decides that they're ready to be honest and reasonable, we're never going to have the two sides come together. I couldn't count on both hands how many times I reached out to Polly or the Spin Docs or any of these people to say, okay, hey, let's let bygones be bygones. There's a national conversation that has to happen because both of us are suffering here. No mm-hmm. way. No, they've got their heels dug in. It's like, this is our narrative. And if you say it loud and you know, that's your talking point.
Repeat it often.
And you repeat it, people will totally believe it. So just go it.
So I actually gave him some real advice. I said that if you actually say it louder, we've learned in the House of Commons, if you repeat it, if you say it louder, if that is your talking point, people will totally believe it. So just go it. If that is your talking point, people will totally believe it. If that is your talking point, people will totally believe it. So just go it.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
Who said that? I mean, got to be a famous conservative. Oh, yeah, no, it was a liberal minister in this group of people we talked about a minute ago. But anyway, all right. Enough off the, you know, of shouting from the soapbox. It's anyways, just such a disaster there.
Yeah.
All right. Absolutely. And by the way, one more. I said I was going to move on, but, you know, I checked out that probably every 4 weeks, I'll look over at the Spin Docs feed and see what kind of disaster is going on. There's been a lot. I'm not going to get into everything that's going on over there, but they are, you know, off the rails again. But they're using the term assault weapons right? That the conservatives want to make assault weapons legal again. Total disinformation, basically.
Oh, yeah.
And Pauly's
doing
it, too. Still hashtag assault weapons and calling them assault weapons. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you remember, like I'm playing right now in the background, you know, City TV showing a full auto mag dump, full capacity mag dump while they're talking about this ban. Like the, you know, it's so disingenuous, the propaganda. But anyway, what a disaster Canadian politics is right now.
Right. Well, and that's why we see the crime rates and the violence rates continue to go up, because the, you know, gun owners and the anti-gun lobbies are all kind of caught up in this big debate. But at the same time, you know, nobody's looking over there at all the actual crime. They never post about actual, you know, street crime and gang crime and all the things that are happening all the time. They never post about it, never talk about it. They only ever want to talk about licensed gun owners. And for me, that's how I know we don't sit at the same table, because we don't have the same goal. We want an end to, you know, crime, violence, and gun smuggling, and they want an end to legal gun ownership. So we don't have the same goals.
Yeah, well, all that stuff runs. If they start talking about the daily violence and where that violence is coming from, it breaks the narrative. And at the end of the day, here's the bottom line. The narrative is more important to these people than the truth. The narrative is more important than people's lives. The narrative is more important than anything. These are ideologues. They're zealots. And so that's how you can tell that you can't reason with somebody, when the narrative is more important than anything else. So anyway, all right. Now I'm going to keep my promise and move on. Now let's talk about some good news, really interesting news. Apparently around 100,000 new PA, like the number of PAL holders in Canada grew by 100,000 in the last year from the, I think it was from 22 to 23. It was in the Commissioner of Firearms report, wasn't it?
Yeah. And you know, what's really interesting about that is, even with everything our community has been going through, years or almost 9 years of being punched in the face by this government, we've had gun bills and gun bans and just a constant assault on our community, and people still want to join it. People still, no matter what the government's been doing, the present government, they still want to join this community, and gun owner numbers are still growing. Yeah. So that's actually incredible. Like, that's really impressive.
Yeah. Of all the de-incentivizing that's been going on, people are still, the community is still growing. It's just amazing. You know, this, if your product is selling out nonstop, you know, there's got to be something about your product that's appealing, right?
Yeah, well, it's like trying to get in. A lot of people contact me, you know, where do I take the Canadian Firearm Safety course? And some of these courses are, you know, they're booked up for months ahead of time. Like, they're just selling out like crazy. And people want to be gun owners. And what I really love about that is not just growing our own individual numbers, but if you think about the little nest that's around every gun owner, you know, you can have a house, a family of five, and maybe one of them is a gun owner. Well, being a gun owner and the priorities that matter to firearms owners affects how they vote, but it also affects the conversations they have with their family, with their circle of friends, with their colleagues and neighbors. So every single gun owner can represent, you know, anywhere from 3 to like 10 votes, right? They can influence them. So yeah, it's important.
Mm-hmm. It is. It is. Mm-hmm. All right. We got through our list.
Okay. Good stuff.
All right. Well, thanks for the update. And I guess we will catch you in the next one.
Okay. And don't forget to get your AGM tickets. Very important. CCFRAGM.ca.
That's right. A bunch of advertising is rolling out this week, because we kind of gave you the quick, it's been really busy around here, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. Between travel and everything else that we got going on. I have financials to do. I got all kinds of things going on. And so we just did kind of a quick launch 2 weeks ago, but there's a lot of advertising and all the other groups and all the rest of that stuff going out this week. So if you're thinking of coming to the AGM, make sure you buy your tickets as soon as possible, because the wave is coming on that.
That's it. Exactly. I can't wait. I'll see you there.
Awesome. All right. Thanks again for the update. We'll see you next time.
All right. We'll talk soon.
All right. That's going to do it for episode 165 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I only have a couple of things I want to go over with you before I let you go. I'll make it quick. Number one, hang in there, right? We talked about our community is expanding by 100,000 new PAL holders in a time where it's never been more challenging politically or as far as property, never been a time where we had less selection of firearms that we could buy as a new firearm owner. all of this stuff, and our community's still growing. You know, that says a lot about why people own firearms, right? And how, what an important part of Canadian culture and our Canadian society that legal firearm ownership is, that our community is still growing by 100,000 people in 1 year, despite everything that the government and anti-gun groups and the rest of these people are doing to make it unattractive and discourage us from doing it. I just think that's really interesting. So, of course, the message is hang in there. Don't give up. Don't stop fighting. If your friends or your cousin or your children or whoever, if they're at all interested in firearms or what it is that you do with firearms, yeah, get them their PAL. Get them into a course. Go through that licensing process. Get that card while you still can, number one. And number two, yeah, join the community. It's still absolutely worth it. And better times are coming for us on the horizon. Like, end of story. The gun buyback is not going to happen before the next election. Absolutely. It is just not going to happen. 100%, basically, I think, if I were to hazard a guess. And then at least we know the bleeding is going to stop for our community. And then now we can work on reversing this stuff. Right? So it's coming around. So keep growing that community. Don't get discouraged. Keep fighting. Don't give up your guns. And let's just keep moving forward because I think it's worth doing. Like, I'm optimistic about it is what I'm trying to say. So, and as I always say, don't let these people get you down. Don't let them reach into your life and take your happiness or your contentment. They're not worth it. This is only a temporary stop along the road to getting our stuff back. And I really do believe that. I'm not trying to tell you a tall tale to keep you optimistic. I believe that myself. I have a ton of now prohibited firearms that are worth a couple of tens of thousands of dollars, and I can't use them either. But I'm really confident that we're going to get them back, and this will be a distant thing in the past, at least for 4 to 8 to 10 years, right? And this is how our system works in Canada. So then by that time, the next generation is going to have to step up and fight for it. I'll be out of it by then. All right, best day ever contest. Our winner will be going on a trip with to Calgary, and Wilson and I are meeting him there, and that's happening this coming Monday. So you'll see footage and maybe even some comment from our winner at that time, in the next podcast as well. So that's very exciting. I'm excited to meet Jeremy and congratulate him on winning the contest. And again, thanks everyone for supporting the contest. Really appreciate it. Speaking of contests, that contest is ending, the All-Canadian Rifle Contest, from our friend Donovan Dewis over at CATF. So if you want to check that out, you can go to firearmrights.ca, hit the contest button, and donate $25 to the CCFR, get 3 entries into the contest, donate $10, get 1 entry into the contest. We're drawing for that pretty darn quick as well. And don't forget, if you want to attend the CCFR AGM, it's all the advertising is going out probably the day before you're watching this or around the day that you're watching this. So the rest of the tickets are probably going to go. So make sure that if you want to come to this thing, to the banquet dinner, of course, is what I'm talking about specifically. Make sure that you get your tickets as soon as possible. CCFRAGM.ca. All right. Thanks, everyone, for watching. Take care. And we'll see you in the next one.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.